Thank you to all the readers. And this is Artie.
Hi, everybody. My name is Art. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. This is my old group. This is the group I got sober with. I'm not really sure what I'd be if I had not found this group. And I'll forever be grateful for the men in this room. And I've done the work out of this book with the help of a higher power and a landscaper I met in this group. I have to say that. I have to say what it is because I like to consider myself an academic guy. Like I have an important job. I rub elbows with doctors and lots of important people, and none of those fucking people could get me sober, right? I took a fucking landscaper. So, step one's a fun step to talk about, right? There's not too much prep that has to go into talking about step one. I mean, I was a superb fuck up. And I was very good at being a degenerate. And I can remember, anytime I talk about step one, whether it's part one or part two, I like to say that I remember the first time I had a drink. I remember who I was with. I was with two guys from the town I grew up in. I believe both of those guys are dead, at least one of them are, from this disease. And I was maybe, I don't know, 14 to 15 years old, and we had somehow come into the possession of some Bud Heavies, as they used to call them, and a pint of Tanza Liquors. Any of you are from Fall River will know Tanza Liquors. Tanza Liquors brand blackberry brandy, which is so good that you have to shake it up to get the syrup to mix with the alcohol. That's right. Some fucking highbrow shit. And that's the first time I had a drink at all. I got a buzz from that. I can remember exactly how that felt, and I'll tell you that I chased that feeling for a few decades. And I appreciate that the book in the early chapters does a great job of describing the different types of people that they had come across when they embarked on this endeavor. And they're not all similar. They're not the same type of person. They're not the same type of drinker. Some of them became heavy drinkers or became problem drinkers later in life, some right away. I was right away. I was a problem drinker the second I found out how good it felt to have a drink. I don't think I can look back now in the past and say that I probably had a pretty uneasy personality as a kid, and was not exactly comfortable in my own skin. And I would not have known that until I picked up a drink, because as soon as I picked up a drink, that problem went away. And I think that's probably part of the reason why I liked it so much. And I chased it for a long, long time. I can tell you that I think I was probably, like I said, about 15 years old. I was not quite a straight-A student, but pretty close. I went to a private high school and Catholic high school, and I was a really good student and what most people probably would have considered a smart kid, and I can tell you that I barely graduated. So it didn't take long to go down the tubes. I got kicked out of the house within a few months of graduation for stealing money for booze and drugs and whatever, whatever was around. And things were not good. So I used to think that it was because, my mother passed away when I was a kid, when I was 10 years old. My father remarried quickly to a person I did not get along with at all. Our relationship is still tepid, but thanks to this program, it's a much more tolerable situation. But the fact of the matter is that that was a blame game. I don't think it would have made any difference what kind of upbringing I had. I think that I am bodily and mentally different from my fellows, and I would have wound up with a problem with booze. I believe that. And I did what most kids do when they're in trouble and have at least a high school diploma. I joined the military. I joined the Marine Corps. And if you learn how to drink in this country in high school, you'll get a fucking PhD in how to drink in the United States Marine Corps, I'll tell you that. Because that was a next level version of how to try and hurt yourself with alcohol. But there are guys that, it was an intense place, right? The Marine Corps is an intense place. Everything done is for intensity, and that will translate into off-duty activities. And of course, those, when you're 18, 19, 20 years old, 21 years old, that will certainly translate into the bar, you know, the nearest bar room, the E club, strip clubs, whatever, especially if you're overseas. And so that really got ramped up. The thing about the Marine Corps is, though, like, I met a lot of people that would cover for me, right? So there's a lot of guys I was really, really close to. And it's the only other place besides this room, besides meetings like this one, where I met guys I'd do anything for and guys that would do anything for me. And I mean, I'm talking about now. Guys I haven't seen in 30 years, I'd trust them with my life. It's just that type of, anybody that's been in the service has probably had a similar experience. But they'll cover for you. And you get away with a lot of stuff. And I got away with a lot of shit. And I shouldn't have, because I did a lot of drink and I did a lot of stupid things. It's easy to say, well, I was just young and in the Marines, and that's what you do when you're in the service. But that didn't stop when I got out of the Marine Corps. It didn't stop when I hit my 30s. It didn't stop when I hit my 40s. And that's a problem. And pretty soon, the jackpots were just coming too fast and too intense. They couldn't be denied anymore. I like some of the language in the book talking about the desperate experiment of the first drink, right? I tried that experiment quite a few times, deliberately, to go by, to walk by a bar room and say, I'm going to go down for one drink, but if something else happens, right, like if I don't go home after that and go to bed, then I'll know I got a problem, right? Well, I must have done that 50 times, you know what I mean? And like I said, that I won't get into how, you know, I mean, if you're sitting in this room listening to me, I'm sure you've had plenty of your own jackpots. I won't get into the details of some of the shenanigans I got myself into. But most of them were either dangerous, illegal, or embarrassing, and usually embarrassing. So at the end, you know, and I tried to stop a couple times. I would go to AA for a few weeks. My father got sober shortly before my mother passed away. And so I would get dragged. My sister and I, after my mother died, my sister and I would get dragged out to the halls. And, you know, it'd be like a layer of smoke in there that thick. And I don't know how many packs of cigarettes I probably theoretically smoked as an 11-year-old. But I sat through all those meetings. A fat lot of good that did me, but I thought, you know, I'll try the AA thing or whatever. And I'd go to AA for a couple of weeks and somebody would say something that would fucking piss me off and I'd cop a resentment and I'd leave. And like the book says, I failed to enlarge my spiritual life, right? And that is not a, for a guy like me anyway, that's not a good recipe. So I was pretty desperate at the end. I was in my early 40s. Just got dumped. My girlfriend said, "This is, you know, enough." I was supposed to meet her and her little boy for breakfast the next morning. And I went by a bar room and said, "If I'm gonna have one beer, and if I don't go home." Of course, I came home in half a blackout at like 8 a.m. Slept till like, I don't know, 2 p.m. And she said, you know, the fuck with you, you know what I mean? And that's exactly what she should have done. And I couldn't see that little boy anymore, and that was devastating. I had such a good relationship with him. He's only, he's maybe 4 or 5 years old. And I said, this is fucking crazy. I was sitting on the couch in my one-bedroom apartment above the bar that I attended bar at, you know? And I just said, this is enough, man. Like, I can't keep doing this. So I went back and tried. I said, I'm going to go to AA meetings. I don't know what else I'm going to do. I'm just going to go to AA meetings. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to fucking as many as I can go to. And I heard guys at the AA meetings say 90 and 90. I'm like, whatever. If that's what it takes, like, I don't want to get left out on a technicality. I'm going to 90 fucking meetings in 90 fucking days. That's what there were a couple days I couldn't go. Then the next day I would go, like, at lunchtime from work, I'd skip out and go to a loony noony to, you know, mostly to just be entertained, and then just so I could double up, so I could keep the streak alive, you know what I mean? Because it's in my head. But in my head, if I, you know, I had made a promise to myself that I was going to give this a go, and if I didn't, I felt like if I didn't make an earnest effort at that, then I might not stick it out, because I didn't stick it out the few times before that, you know, and I wasn't quite convinced of those earlier times, and I went back out to get some convincing, and sure enough, I got it. And so that's what I did, but I was unprepared. Like, this reading really spends a lot of time talking about much of what it talks about in the first part of the step. In this group, we do mention that there's a separation there between the first part of the step and the second part of the step, and the second part being that, you know, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. That takes on some meaning for me, because after just a few months without a drink, I was unprepared for what I felt like, and it was not a pleasant experience. I mean, I had I couldn't sit still. I had just felt like I had a lawnmower or like machinery going on in my head. I really thought I was losing my grip on reality. I was just not in a great spot. And truth be told, I was thinking about drinking again. I was like, you know, if I'm going to be like this, I would rather just be bombed. You know what I mean? If I'm going to be miserable, I'd rather be bombed and miserable than sober and miserable. So, I remember, a guy that I had met in AA in the early days, he was leaving to move to Florida, which is he had about as much sobriety as I did, so that was a fucking great idea. but he was leaving the next day, and he wanted me to meet him at this meeting to, you know, kind of say goodbye or whatever. And I was like, whatever. So I went to a men's meeting in Somerset. I haven't been to since. They call it the How Now meeting, or the fucking Brown Cow meeting. I don't know. And there was a commitment there from the Cape, and I forget what group it was. It wasn't this group, but there was a guy. A guy spoke. He little Irish guy. He had an Irish brogue, and he was a good speaker. He's a funny guy, and I thought I have some family from Ireland. My grandparents are Irish immigrants, so and my family has all been back several times. So I decided to introduce myself to him, ask him where he's from, and I told him where my family's from, and he said, "Are you new?" Which must have been the most obvious thing in the world. And I said, yeah, you know, I just started coming around about, you know, like six, seven weeks ago. He said, "Hey, you know, there's a men's meeting out on Cape Cod that'll help you with that shitty feeling you got in your stomach." I thought that was like the first meaningful thing anybody had ever said to me in AA. And that's a true story. I heard all the, you know, all the colloquialisms about, like, if your ass falls off, pick it up and take it to a meeting. I don't really feel like that was a constructive piece of advice. You know what I mean? Like, carrying my broken ass to a meeting is really not the message I needed at that particular point in time. But for somebody to look at me and say, like, "Hey, man, I know you feel like a piece of shit right now," because that's what I felt like. But there's a group of dudes, like, out on the Cape that might be able to help you out. I was like, that was some direction that was different, you know what I mean? And I said, no matter what happens, like, I won't, that was like I think it was a Friday, and I said, all right, I'm going to make it to next Thursday, and I'm going to go to this meeting. And that's what I did. I got my Harley Davidson, and I rode out to Hyannis at St. Francis Xavier Church, and I found this group, and it was a absolutely life-changing day in my life. I passed by that church today. It's the first time I've been by there since we moved this group over here, and it was like, got a little emotional driving by there. I don't know what my life would be like if I had not made that trip. What I heard in that meeting absolutely blew me away. I never saw that many guys, like in a men's meeting, you know, in a men's meeting. I've been to meetings that were big, but this was like a big meeting, and it wasn't like one of those, you know, come one, come all, you know, high school cafeteria meeting. This was like a legit meeting, and there were a lot of guys in there. They were on the fear step. Rob was speaking. I remember that. And I walked into that downstairs, and I was obviously must have looked like I didn't know where I was. And a guy approached me and said, are you new?" I said, "Yeah, I met this guy Bernie. He told me to come down here." He's like, "Oh," he said, "drinking's not any fun anymore." And he smiled, which I didn't like so much. And he walked over, he introduced me to Dennis, and then he grabbed the book and he handed it to me. He said, "Why don't you come down and sit over here next to me?" Like, it turns out the guy's like only up one day out of the summer. Like, he's used to be a member of this group, Hugh, and he lives down in Florida now. But he said, "All you got to do is read when it's your turn, and then when it's your turn to speak, you just introduce yourself and pass." And I was like, "Whatever, man. I would have fucking washed his car. I would have done anything." You know what I mean? So that's what I did. And when I got to him, he did, you know, he spoke his piece on the fear part, whatever. And he said, I'll never forget this. He said, "So I don't know what to tell you, buddy, but if you're sitting in this room next to me, you're fucked." And he laughed, and the whole room laughed, and I didn't laugh. I was because I kind of got what he was talking about. And he made it a point of saying, "Listen, buddy, fucking no one walks through that door by accident. If you're sitting in this room, like, listening to the rest of us talk, there's a reason you got on your fucking motorcycle and rode 45 minutes from Fall River to, conservatively, you know what I mean, to get to Hyannis in the basement of a church to listen to these guys talk. You know what I mean? Like, you just fucking, if you're sitting in this room listening to me talk, there's a reason you're here. You know what I mean? Let's not fucking fool ourselves. You know what I mean? If it's just slightly becoming obvious to you, believe me, it's obvious to everyone in your life." So, I met my sponsor at that meeting, and he said, "You got wheels?" I said, "Yeah." He's like, "Can you go to Kingston tomorrow night?" I said, "Yeah." And that's what I did. I met him in Kingston, and then we embarked on this process. And I'll tell you, what a gift, man. Like, the place I was at, you know, 7.5, 8 years ago was a desperate, desperate, bad place. And I mean, today, I mean, I have a dynamite job. I'm being recruited by another job out here in the Cape. They're, like, bidding for my services. I've never thought in a million years something like, people are, like, arguing about how much they want to pay me. That's amazing. I could barely keep a job before. I've got a truck with an inspection sticker on it. That's mind-blowing. You know what I mean? Like, I to this day, I can appreciate that. Drive down the highway and go, "Fucking pull me over, man. I don't give a shit." Like, the truck is registered. I got a sticker. I'm not stoned. I'm not drunk. I'm good. The most you can do is give me a speeding ticket. That's a fucking win. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I have a house. I'm married to to just a hardworking, loyal girl. She just gave birth to my son 3 weeks ago. And I have a 3.5-year-old, we have a 3.5-year-old daughter, and the problems of today are not like the problems of yesterday. You know what I mean? So all I can tell you is this, man, like, you know, this is a miracle program, but it's a program for people who want it. It's not a program for people who need it. So, I mean, if you're just going to bullshit, then it's not going to fucking work. But if you really want to make a change, to have a shift in moral values, as Bobby says, this is the place to do it, man. You know what I mean? One step at a time with a sponsor from this group, and it'll happen. Thanks for letting me share. Thank you.
Okay, can you please listen up for 10 seconds? I have to reread this.